This Quest for Gold sponsorship is brought to you by ComEd, providing options and resources to businesses looking to make the switch to electric vehicles. Learn more at comed.com/clean.
Welcome to Quest for Gold. I'm Ryan Burrow. We are 49 days out from the Summer Olympics in Paris. Lots of new qualifications, lots of trials still on the schedule as we come down to crunch time. This week, the U.S. men's and women's rowing teams were announced. The triathlon team was announced. Also, the U.S. women's indoor volleyball team was announced. Jordan Poulter, who we spoke with in episode 40, made the cut there. Another Jordan Larson, nicknamed the governor, is headed to her fourth Olympics. The U.S. women's volleyball team won gold in Tokyo. The U.S. women's three-on-three basketball team has been named. Two WNBAers, Cameron Brink and Ryan Howard, were named to the team as the U.S. looks to defend its gold from Tokyo. All four of these players, by the way, are first-time Olympians. Former NBA player Chase Buttinger is headed to the 2024 Paris Olympics, but not as a basketball player, as a beach volleyball player. Simone Biles finished atop every category at the U.S. Gymnastics Championships last weekend, including winning the all-around for women by nearly 6 points. Full points. Not a shocker. She's been invited to the Olympic trials in Minneapolis later this month. Suni Lee had a strong finish on the balance beam, finishing second. Jordan Chiles finished second on the uneven bars. And Sky Blakely finished in the top three of five of the six categories, including overall. On the men's side, Brody Malone was your all-around champion with strong performances from Yul Mondaur and Shane Wiskus. The U.S. men's U-23 soccer team takes on Japan in a friendly Olympic warm-up this week. After the game, we're expected to get the roster of the players headed to Paris. The Paris Olympic organizers have unveiled a display of the five Olympic rings mounted on the Eiffel Towers. The French capital marks 50 days until the start of the games. The structure of rings made of recycled French steel was displayed on Friday on the south side of the 135-year-old landmark in central Paris, overlooking the Seine River. The hugely popular tower in central Paris has seen soaring visitor numbers in the lead-up to the games. Russian hackers have reportedly been using AI to disguise Tom Cruise's voice as a way to spread misinformation about the Summer Games. A documentary called The Olympics Have Fallen criticizes the Olympic movement and uses a voice that sounds very familiar, just like Tom Cruise. The Russian athletes will not be able to compete under the Russian flag during the games this summer due to the war in Ukraine. Take this for what it's worth. A new report from King Casino Bonus out of the UK predicts California will be the state that sees the most amount of American medalists in Paris. This week on Quest for Gold, we had a chance to chat with a friend of the show and 2024 qualified Olympic sailor, Maggie Shea, who happened to be in town for a fundraiser. It's always more fun to do our interviews in person. We had a great time talking about the last 3 years of work she and teammate Steph Robles have put in to try and get a better result out of Paris compared to Tokyo. Well, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. What are you doing in town right now? Why are you here?
Well, thanks for having me. We are home for a quick rest and recover, but also a fundraiser and a send-off. The Chicago Yacht Club Foundation has been hugely supportive of our team, and so they're doing a hooray for Marseille to bid us adieu and have a little toast and celebration.
That's awesome. I mean, it's kind of good to have that like last little pep rally almost, and then there's obviously a fundraising aspect of all of this. Is this specifically for your team to raise money for the team?
For both us and the Chicago Yacht Club Foundation, who are one of our biggest supporters. And the Chicago Yacht Club Foundation does really cool stuff in Chicago to bring sailing to underrepresented communities. So we are really excited to be aligned with them and to support their efforts as well. But we also get an enormous boost of fun energy from people that just love us and have believed in us for the last 10 years. And our training right now is so intense, and we're trying to get everything down to the last little, you know, millimeter of optimization on the boat and everything. So to come home to people who are just like, hey, we think you guys are great, is it's so meaningful and gives us a really big boost of energy and stoke.
That's fantastic. And you're in town this week. I mean, do you have a little time for R&R? Is it go, go, go?
We'll take a few days that the team agrees to not speak to each other. And I think that will be our best sort of rest and recharge. And I'll go visit my family. And
is Stephanie here?
Steph's on her way right now. She lives in Miami, but she's coming up for the event because she's also got a lot of Chicago roots and she's from Wisconsin. So we call her Miami transplant. She'll always be a Midwest girl too.
Yeah, I want to get, because I think the last time we spoke, you were in Miami doing some training. What do these next, I think we're within 50 days now. What do these next 50 days look like for you leading up to the games?
They're going to be pretty intense. Honestly, we try to ramp up the intensity on the water, but in shorter periods of time. We're just carrying on with all of the fitness, all of the, you know, we put a lot of systems in place about a year ago at the test event. So we're trying to just make sure we're comfortable with all of the, basically all of the data we get when the games begins. You know, nothing is new, nothing is weird. We're able to sort of treat those days on the water just like any other day. So,
and you've been training there.
Yes.
You will have everything, kind of the landscape memorized, everything.
That's the hope. That's the hope. But what we did learn in Tokyo is that the games happen and things get weird.
Sure.
You know, everyone is in overdrive. We are in overdrive. Competitors behave bizarrely. Measurers are, you know, doing their best to, you know, nail their moment. And so we did just learn that, like, you try to anticipate every scenario, but it's really hard to do. So we're trying to also prepare ourselves for that element of unknown and weirdness that is the games. It's the Olympics. It's there's some special dust that just makes things different.
Sure. And weather always plays a factor, too. It sounds like it could be hot. We don't know.
Yes.
We don't know what the wind situation is going to be.
It will be hot. That's the one thing we do know and we can count on. It's going to be super hot in Marseille. We're preparing the ice baths, the ice vests, all the cooling strategies started getting deployed last month. But you're right, the weather's really variable. Sometimes we get this Mistral weather system that's a very strong wind, mm-hmm. and can be, in some parts of the year, it can be like 40 knots and you can't sail. But generally in the summer, it's just really windy with huge waves. And then we also tend to get some very standard Mediterranean light sea breezes, which are tricky to sail in. But last year at the test event, which was during the same Olympic period, we got a little bit of everything. So on the weather front, we're expecting everything. On the temperature front, we know it's going to be hot as heck.
Obviously, it's an advantage being there and training there, but I assume the other teams are as well.
Yes, a lot of us are. Marseille is a city, just like Chicago, so actually the space on the ground has been really limited. We've got a really great team base with along with like eight other countries, and then all the other countries are sort of scattered about the bay. So when we move into the Olympic Village in July, that'll be the first time all the countries are actually together in one venue.
Okay.
And there's something special and cool about that, and we'll finally kind of see what everyone's been working on, and, you know, they reveal their boats out of the shed, and we get to...
So is the Olympic Village in Marseille, then? There's going to be
yes.
one for you guys specifically there. It's not only in Paris.
Yeah, they've actually built out an Olympic marina, and it's gorgeous and totally cool, and all the boats can launch on a ramp.
Air-conditioned?
No! No!
That's been the big complaint so far is, no yeah. air-conditioning.
I'd say we Americans are very spoiled with our... we're so accustomed to a ton of air conditioning and a ton of ice.
Yes.
And we kind of, you know, leaving the country, we're like, oh, this isn't the norm. Wow. but it's an outdoor marina, basically. We're really excited. You know, they built a really cool thing. The athletes for the village, we're in a remote satellite village because we're not in Marseille or in Paris. And they're going to split us up, and we actually don't know which countries are going to be in which athlete village yet. So that's okay. going to be sort of a fun mystery reveal to see which other teams we'll be with. But that's all part of the game, you know.
Have you learned any French?
Oui. No.
No,
my French is terrible.
Do they all kind of cater to English then?
They do. And honestly, people are so gracious abroad that they're sort of excited for a chance to practice their English. And their English is much better than anything I can pull together. So it's... I'm terrible.
What a different experience between Tokyo and we'll get to the Olympics themselves, but I mean, just culturally between, Japan and France. Are you looking forward to doing things off the water then? I mean, are you going to have any time to?
Oh, I think I'll find a way, yes, to have some fun in the south of France in the summer. Yeah. I mean, we take time off and it is just a gorgeous place. Like, you can't go wrong in Provence, and the beaches in Calanx are so beautiful. The hospitality is amazing, as it was in Tokyo. People are just excited to have us there, and it's just such a beautiful country.
When does your event fall in the 2 weeks?
July 28th to August 1st. So
pretty much early on.
Yes, very early.
Are you going to be able to attend opening ceremonies or no?
No, no, not.
Closing,
no.
Maybe?
Maybe closing, yeah. Hopefully closing. That's the plan. But opening is like within 48 hours of when we race, and the logistics are a little complicated because we're in Marseille, which is a 3-hour train ride away from Paris.
Yeah, obviously you probably want to see how things play out with your races first before you kind of plan out the back end, perhaps, if you stick around for a little bit longer. But are you planning on going to Paris?
Totally. And I want to like go cheer on every other sport. I mean, we didn't have that opportunity in Tokyo, obviously, because of COVID. Mm-hmm. They did a fantastic job getting the event off, but it did mean that we all had to fly out as soon as possible to minimize people on the ground. So I want to go to every single event and cheer everyone on and hang out at the Team USA house and do all of that fun, you know, touristy athlete thing.
Talk a little bit about the Tokyo experience, because it was a very weird Olympics in that, you know, your travel was limited, family wasn't allowed to be there, fans, you know, weren't allowed to gather. You mentioned some of the athletes were able to go, but they kind of had to go in pods to watch other athletes. And basically the Team USA became the family, right? Like, it would be Team USA athletes cheering on Team USA athletes because there was no one else in the city. Just talk a little bit about that experience and kind of what was cool about it, maybe what was kind of weird about it.
Well, like you said, our team became our family, and there's a sort of closeness that we all had that is really special. You know, it was weird not having our family there. I think for the athletes, when things went well, they wanted their families to celebrate. And for us, when things didn't go our way, we also wanted our families to hug, you know, and that was tough. But we were so lucky to have an amazing group around us that we had sort of potted up with, as you say. So that's a change I'm looking forward to. I would say with Tokyo, though, we were so grateful that they got the event off that we would have, you know, worn 7 masks if we had to. You know, it was sure. Like, whatever the rules are, let's go along with them because they're allowing us to be here and compete. And so there were a lot of unique rules and playbooks and unique anxiety, you know, about like even seeing your friend, like my really good friends that I've been competing against for 5 years and trying to give them a hug. Okay, I can't do that now, you know. And so you missed out, and there was a bit of awkwardness almost because people had different levels of anxiety. I mean, in the cafeteria, for example, there was plexiglass between each of the dining seats. Yeah. So even when I sat down with my teammate, who I sail with all day, there was a bit of plexiglass between us, you know, like a...
And you didn't want to get COVID when you were there and shut down everything. I mean,
yeah,
you'd
totally
be very, very cautious. It sounded like this will be a more normal experience, yes, hopefully, for you. What's different between how you trained... Well, let's step back a second. How satisfied were you with the race in Tokyo, your performance, how it all went off and everything? Like, what did you walk away from that competition feeling?
We were very disappointed in our personal performance. It was like the worst result we'd had at an event in several years. The event itself was run incredibly well, and it was a flawless execution of race management and everything, and everyone sailed really well. We made a few mistakes and took ourselves out of the final round, which was a medal race. So we were gutted. We were totally disappointed. And I actually planned to retire after Tokyo. And we were like, our work here is not done. There's unfinished business on the water. It left us with this really hungry feeling. And we had to go through a period of time that we decided, like, is this sustainable hunger to carry on for the next 3 years? Because the last cycle was 5. You know, it was so weird with COVID.
Yeah.
And the travel and the extended travel and the delay and all those things. And so we had to kind of do some soul searching and decide, hey, do we have enough fuel in the tank for 3 more really intense years? And how are we going to do that? So we had a period of reflection. We decided we were going to change some things about even what we do within our team management, how we divide our jobs up on the water, off the water, all sorts of things. And that's been the objective of this next cycle, is like, we're so grateful to have a second crack at it. I think that's such a rare thing in life, to get a second chance to really do it how you want it, you know? Mm-hmm. We've learned so much. We've felt like we're, even in 3 years, we've grown an enormous amount as like athletes and people and sailors and friends and teammates and all of these things. We've had some adversity in the last few years that just made us so much stronger. And throughout the whole time, we were like, we're going to be dedicated to being resilient, you know, and we worked really hard in Tokyo on moving forward from mistakes, you know, and just move on. Don't think about it. Don't dwell on it. And we got really good at that. And now we're like, the next step is, okay, how can the mistakes actually make you way stronger? You know, and instead of moving on, how can we learn from it, talk about it, dig into it, mm-hmm, figure out how to do it better next time? And so it's been this huge period of growth, and I'm just really proud of what we've accomplished already in 3 years. You know, we're not racking up the medals and saying, you know, we're, you know, on track for a medal. You know, we can't say that right now. But what we can say is that we've developed areas of our campaign that we're really proud of, that took a lot of effort and have resulted in a lot of growth. It meant we had to take some events to just be process focused and skill focused. Mm-hmm. And so we sacrificed the overall result of the event to work on really specific skill sets, you know, and that could take a huge hit on your ego, or you can say, this is a really important part of our process, you know, and we like dug into that. So I'm really proud of what we've accomplished already. I am hopeful and confident that things are going to go well. But the objective is just really be proud of how we sail and what we do on the water in Paris, and understand it's been part of this 8-year process, you know, and any single race isn't going to define who we are.
You guys are a little bit older, obviously, than last time.
Oh, hey.
You feel, well, just a little
kidding.
Bit,
yeah,
just
yeah.
3 years. But I mean, yeah. Do you feel like you're a better team than
totally.
You were going into Tokyo?
Absolutely. Yes. And we are older. We're on the older side of the whole fleet. We're, you know, you could call us the grandmas. We're part of the old guard mm-hmm. of gals that started sailing when they first changed the boat from a men's only platform to a male and female class. And so it's fun to be part of that old group that's like, oh, we've been around here. You know, like, I've been sailing the boat for 12 years now. And there's a little bit of swagger and confidence that comes with that, being the sort of grandmas in the boat park, you know, on the really big breezy days. We cannot deny that the 21-year-old girls are fitter in a lot of ways. They have, like, stamina and power that's incredible. So we have to be better at recovery. We have to be better at using our energy smartly and strategically, you know. But I will say at the end of those days, we also avoid some really bad wipeouts and crashes because we've seen it a million times.
Sure.
We know how to do the smart move. We know how to pull back and not send it as hard sometimes. So it's really impressive to see younger girls just bombing by us, you know, and we're like, wow, they are sending it. You know, there's a moment to kind of tip your cap, like, oh, you go girls, you know. But we do feel good at the end of the day when we sort of minimize mistakes and you can get to the front of the fleet by also just being a little bit more strategic, you know, so that's a skill we have really learned and mastered.
It sounds like the mental aspect really stepped up. You know, one of the things when I went to the Team USA Summit, obviously we saw it with Simone Biles in 2021, was kind of the mental aspect with athletes. I know Team USA is really kind of, the USOPC, I should say, is really kind of invested time and energy, especially in this cycle, to focus on athlete mental health and giving them options. Is that something that you guys are involved in as far as meeting with sports psychs together as a team, or
totally
like that?
Yeah. It's a huge part of it. Yep. And it has been a really weird last 8 years, you know, between having a new team and then COVID and then deciding to go again. And so I dealt with a lot of like depression and anxiety around Tokyo, just being away from family, alone on the road for too long, getting really homesick, not being in control of my schedule or my environment. You know, all of those things made it really tough to be on the road for extended periods of time. And we started working with a sports psych for the Tokyo quad. He helped us a lot.
Both of you two together?
Together
and
individually.
Okay.
Yeah, all of the above. And we made a ton of progress, and he helped us really level up our game. And then we actually, during our period of sort of reflection and soul searching after Tokyo, decided that we needed to go a different direction because we were growing as, you know, we had different needs as people. So we went in two directions. On the one hand, we were like, let's solidify our teamwork with a specific team coach who works on making teams as strong as possible and as effective as possible and helps make people leaders and you know, figure out what you're best at and how you can best contribute to a team and organization. So we did that for a sort of short period of time. And then we also re-engaged with a new sports psych who has been helping us really embrace our differences as athletes and people and kind of focus on our strengths and what we can bring to the table. And that's been an evolution as a team where we're like, hey, we've also grown up. Steph and I have been friends for 15 years, but we're different people in a lot of ways than we were 10 years ago or 5 years ago even. We keep growing and changing. And so we just decided, how do we set up our team best to address the people we've sort of become now and who we want to be and what we want to take on? A sports psychologist is such a critical part of our team, and the USOPC, Team USA, everyone's sort of awareness about mental health and the destigmatization, if it's fair to say, you know, or the efforts that everyone's been making to destigmatize mental health struggles has been so helpful as an athlete. We've dealt with a ton of burnout, and so
sure.
It's also really helpful to talk to, you know, other teammates about that and talk to other retired athletes about how to deal with it, how to prevent it, how to get through it, you know, and sit with it. And so all of the things, I mean, it's been a really big part of it. And I appreciate the efforts of Simone Biles and Michael Phelps and everyone who's talked about it before, because it makes it easier to talk about now. And I think every single person that just sort of says, hey, this is okay, and it's part of it, is awesome.
I'm always amazed when I talk to athletes who have been through the cycle about that downtime, like after the games. It's like, that was it. Like, I've worked this entire cycle this hard, and you either come away, even ones who come away with a medal, Right. You know, it's like there's a crash. You know, it's like, okay, I walked away with a piece of hardware. That's awesome. I'll always be an Olympian. I'll always have a gold medal. But, you know, it's like all everything you worked for, and that's all you got. So it's interesting to kind of see this. And it looks like they're focusing, too, on finding different platforms for some of these athletes. Maybe this is the last cycle, and you're trying to think of, you know, what kind of career you want to go into. And it sounds like they're really investing a lot of time and energy into the athlete themselves rather than just performance and results. So it seems as though that's going to be an advantage to Team USA going into Paris. I'm sure other countries are doing this as well, but it was fun and interesting to see. Okay, what kind of physical training do you do for your sport?
Lifting, the stuff I running. Like or the stuff I don't like. The stuff that's really effective for the sport happens to be like rowing, which I'm not very good at. High intensity interval training, agility work, a lot of that sort of power focused interval training has been very effective because our races are 30 minutes long. We do 3 or 4 a day, and it's all about just short bursts of a lot of power. And Steph and I have different roles and different physical training programs. So my job is a lot more like high heart rate, max output, you know, max power and strength. Steph's is more endurance based, and we need to keep her brain working.
Okay.
So we actually don't ever want Steph's heart rate above, you know, zone 2 or 3. Like, we want her to stay in the green and the yellow. And so we choreograph the boat appropriately, you know, so the roles on board are divided by who is giving max effort at different times. And my heart rate gets into zone 5 several times throughout a race. And we want that. But so at those times, I'm not making any decisions. And Steph is the strategist on board. Well, she's always the strategist on board. But we make sure that I'm not trying to feed information while I'm also physically exhausted and exerting a ton of energy.
You guys don't have to. It's not like a sport like wrestling or weightlifting where you guys have to cut weight before or anything like that, do you?
No, thank goodness. Yeah. No. And we're actually on the opposite program where in sailing, the taller you are, the more riding moment you have.
Okay.
And you can't see us, but Steph and I, neither of us are particularly tall.
Okay.
So you make up for riding moment and weight and mass. And so we actually try pretty hard to maintain weights, body weights that are about 15 to 20 pounds heavier than we normally would walk around. So there's actually a lot of bulking and a lot of eating and a lot of hand-me-down pantsing and a lot, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And a lot of
sure.
Passing on of clothes and a lot of ice cream after dinner. And so that part of it's actually been fun and, you know, not painful. It's not too painful to just have to eat a little more food.
can you think about LA 2028 or
no? I have no idea.
Not yet.
No, no, I mean,
I'll reach out to you at some point down the road about that. All right, where can people find you online and talk a little bit about the fundraising aspect if people want to donate?
We are Roble Shea Sailing, and Roble is Steph's last name, R-O-B-L-E. Mine is Shea, S-H-E-A, RobleSheaSailing.com, or at Roble Shea Sailing on all the social media platforms. RobleSheaSailing.com/donate if you feel like contributing. We are constantly fundraising for our team.
And for what? What do you need money for?
We self-fund a lot of the operating expenses. So the U.S. Sailing team contributes to about 1/3 of our annual operating expenses, and then we fundraise for the rest of it. So that's purchasing boats and sails, hiring coaches, paying regatta entry fees, paying housing on the road. Airfare, unfortunately, is expensive. You know,
sure.
Literally all the costs that it takes to compete internationally most of the months of the year.
You're good. And social media, can people follow you anywhere?
Yes, please. At Roble Shea Sailing is our handle.
Instagram?
Mm-hmm. Instagram, okay. Facebook, yeah.
Lots of pictures. Very good. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you joining
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you, Maggie. If you'd like to donate to the team, you can go to RobleSheaSailing.com. There's a link there. That'll do it for this episode of Quest for Gold. Next week, we head to the mat to chat with a women's wrestler who fully expects to win gold in Paris. I'm Ryan Burrow. We'll see you then.